Welcome to the Weekly Transit, a podcast exploring the intersection of Western astrology and Jungian psychology. Astrology is a language that communicates how the planets and stars influence life on Earth, while psychology helps us navigate both conscious and unconscious experiences. Together, these tools offer the potential for self-understanding, growth, and transformation. Join astrologer Scott Tajarian and me, psychotherapist Gabriella D'Urso, as we dive into the cosmic forecast each week.
Hi, Gabriella.
Hey, Scott.
Welcome to the Weekly Transit. This is the week of February 5th through the 11th. This week, we're going to be highlighting multiple transits. There's actually like 10 transits that are happening, but in the interest of condensing, combining, finding that fluidity and not getting stuck in the rigidity of each and every transit, we've narrowed it down to 5 transits, which are including all 10 transits, but we're combining them because they're all sort of happening at once. And really, I could boil it down to 4 transits. So let's kind of go from that frequency.
Okay.
4 transits. And get deep.
Sounds good.
Sounds good, Gabriella? Okay, cool. So the first transit this week has to do with Mercury. And we touched on this last week with Mercury moving into Aquarius. And I looked it up because I didn't have it at the top of mind last week when I
top of mind, no pun intended.
Top of mind. Mercury is the planet of the mind. And I teased that Mercury, as it transited into the fixed air sign symbolized by the water bearer, Aquarius, it would form a conjunction with Pluto, the god of death, lord of the underworld, the planet of transformation. Mercury is guide of souls to the underworld. So there is a synastry, a harmony, a connectivity to these two planets.
I think you said Mercury is the guide of souls to the underworld instead of Pluto.
You're right, I did say that. Because Mercury is the guide of souls to the underworld. Pluto is lord of the underworld. Mercury is the guide of souls to the underworld. So this is their connection to each other. They both have this connection to the underworld.
But Mercury is the mind.
It is the mind.
And the underworld?
It's guide of souls to the... Mercury rules merchants and thieves. So there is sort of a shadow side to Mercury. Your mind, get your mind out of the gutter. You're thinking dirty thoughts. There's a connection to Mercury and the shadow realm, the sixth sense. Mercury is the guide of souls to the underworld. It's the ruler of thieves. Thieves operate where? In the underworld.
I've never known that about Mercury. It's interesting. We're always talking about Mercury, I guess, on a practical level, because it's one of the quickest moving planets, right?
Yes.
And it's closest, one of the closest to Earth.
Yes.
And it's just occurring to me now, we're so obsessed with the mind and what it's doing, what it's thinking about, how much it understands, kind of to our detriment at times. And it seems obvious to me now, but because of Mercury, because of the placement.
The placement.
I mean, it's proximity to Earth.
It's proximity to Earth. It's close to Earth.
And it's movement. So it's creating movement in the mind.
Yes.
And it's creating this huge need for us to empty out the mind.
Yes.
Meditation, you know.
There's a lot of phrases like, Your mind is in a dark place. You're thinking negative thoughts or dark thoughts. So there is this connection to the shadow realm of Mercury. Mm-hmm. But like what you're saying is there's a lot of control with Mercury being so close and the effect that it has on the planet. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're alluding to there?
Yeah, and I'm just noticing how important, like how much we value the functioning of the mind.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because the mind helps us understand. Mm-hmm. And when we understand something, we feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a knowing. And I just have to say, I think it was last week you might have mentioned this, about how I say things repetitively. I repeat myself over and over again.
Right.
You've probably heard me say, guide of souls to the underworld in reference to Mercury 1,000 times.
Just heard it today.
You just heard it
for
right
the first
now,
time.
For the first time. Exactly.
Well, that's kind of scary.
You know, but the reason why, and I didn't say this last week, but the reason why I repeat things so much, it's because of my yoga teacher. You know, I was taking yoga for like 10 years. I would go 3 to 5 days a week and basically seeing the same teacher, different teachers here and there, but mostly this one teacher. And after, you know, maybe 5 years or so of going, I mentioned something that she had said during class in the Indian Sanskrit of like yoga language that, you know, the mm-hmm. phrases. And I repeated that back to her. I was like, you said this thing and you said that it means this. And she's like, yeah, I say that every class.
I've been saying that for years.
Yeah, exactly. You've heard me say that like 1,000 times.
Isn't that interesting?
And I just finally heard it that one time. I was like, mm-hmm. oh my God, wow. So it takes a while, like you've said many episodes ago, for the seed to sprout from the unconscious to the conscious. Mm-hmm. It was getting fed into my unconscious over and over and over again. Just like I'm feeding your unconscious with, and the people that are listening to us, in terms of how to understand and articulate the language of astrology. Mm-hmm. So I will say things over and over again, but you may not actually hear what I'm saying until you've heard me say it 1,000 times.
Hmm.
So when you think of Pluto and Scorpio, and in my rambling Taurus rising sort of way, I would say
Pluto and Scorpio? Or Pluto and Mercury?
Pluto and Mercury. See, my mind has gotten away from me. When you think of Pluto and Mercury, because my mind was already moving on to the next thing that I alluded to earlier, and I said, I teased this last week, but didn't actually have the facts, and so now I do. And what I was teasing last week was, this is probably the first time since 1798, 1797, that Mercury and Pluto have been conjunct in Aquarius. Hmm. And so I went back and looked, and it was March 16th, 1797 was the last time that Mercury and Pluto were conjunct in Aquarius.
Hmm. Wow.
So that's what? 227 years
mm-hmm.
that it's been that these two haven't connected in Aquarius. And there's a special connection between Pluto and Mercury.
Was there anything significant about that connection when it happened 200 plus years ago?
Well, I ask all the historians that are listening, you know, tell us what was going on March 16th, 1797. I mean, maybe yeah. I'll look it up and do some research and we can talk about it in the next episode. But,
yeah,
you know,
I'm just
this
curious.
This was during the end of the French Revolution. And it was in the midst of the Industrial Revolution. So, you know, we've talked about the Bloody Revolution or revolutions, because when Pluto was transiting through Aquarius was the end of the American Revolution and it was the French Revolution as well. But there was also during the Industrial Revolution. So innovations.
Mm-hmm.
Aquarius is about innovation. And so there was a lot of innovations that occurred during the Industrial Revolution.
Well, and anytime there's an innovation, there's typically something else that's made obsolete. So there's a death of some sort.
Yes, exactly.
Like when DVDs came out.
Oh, wow.
The VHS.
Oh, DVDs, but DVDs are...
are already obsolete. Exactly. I know. I'm already in the past here,
it's
but...
It's streaming now. It's all... I know. Like, nobody has a DVD. It's all streaming.
Some people still have DVD collections.
They do? Okay, cool. Yeah. Awesome. Good for them, you know?
But
I got my VHS tapes here from the 1980s. That's my era. The VHS. You pop it in, you press... play on the machine.
If it were still up to you, we would have VHS tapes
no,
in our garage.
No, I love the streaming. I love the streaming. I don't need any VHS tapes.
But that's just an example.
Yeah.
Of like something new comes in, mm-hmm. and then
something
there's an
old goes
and something
out.
Has to go out. Uh-huh. And I think that happens with our consciousness too.
Yes.
Like with the way that we understand. The way that the mind reveals things to us.
Yes. Yes. True. And so when you talk about the unconscious or the conscious, it's Mercury. Mercury is the planet of the conscious. And it's transiting conjunct with Pluto. So it's transforming the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking about the special relationship between Mercury and Pluto, they're the two smallest planets.
Mercury and Pluto are?
Yes.
Okay.
They're the two smallest planets. Mercury is closest to the sun. Pluto is furthest from the sun. When you look at the symbols in the language of astrology, and if you aren't familiar with the language of astrology and the symbols, I have a book, The Basics of Astrology, that you can find on Amazon. But there's three root symbols in the language of astrology. There's the circle of spirit, which represents your eternal soul, no beginning, no end. The cross of matter, which represents the four elements of matter, fire, earth, air, water. The crescent of receptivity, which represents giving, receiving, teaching, learning. Pluto and Mercury are each made of all three of the root symbols.
Hmm.
Pluto is a circle of spirit on top of a cross of matter. Mercury is a circle of spirit on top of a cross of matter. The difference between the two is that the crescent of receptivity is in a different place for each symbol. For Pluto, the crescent of receptivity is in between the circle of spirit and the cross of matter, symbolizing the transformation that occurs to the eternal soul in the world of matter. Mercury, the crescent of receptivity is on top of the circle of spirit. It looks like an antenna or a hat, signifying your eternal soul in the world of matter and how it thinks, how it receives information, processes that information, and communicates that information to others.
Hmm. The symbols, I love how you've shared this information in the book, by the way, because it really helps for those of us who are visual learners understand the symbols in a deeper way.
Mm-hmm.
And thinking too how you said that Mercury is closest to the sun. So Mercury is the mind, the sun is our identity, and we do really identify with the
how
mind.
We think.
With
our
how
thoughts.
We think. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
On a real practical level, that's real for
exactly.
us here.
And when you yeah. think about it from an astrological perspective, Mercury is never more than one sign away from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So if the sun is in Aquarius, like it is right now, Mercury can only be in three places. It can either be in Capricorn, Aquarius, or Pisces.
The fact that Mercury is not that far from the sun, there's like this, it feels like there's inherently this like limitation maybe to the capacity of our mind in a sense.
That it can't be too far from our identity.
Yeah, there's something that feels limiting about that to me. Like that we can only explore, it's like the mind is on a leash or something.
Mm-hmm.
It can only go so far from our identity. And I wonder, I mean, I would say from a psychological perspective that that's, it's almost like the mind has a limitation maybe because of the ego.
That's a great point.
I wonder if that's maybe one interpretation.
Mm-hmm. I love that interpretation.
And that's why we need, from an Aquarian perspective, why everyone in the community is so important, because we all have different capacities for our mental process. We all have that limitation in the same way that you described, mm-hmm. that Mercury can only be so far from the sun. But we literally, from what you're describing, are not able to think like one another. Mm. Like there's a barrier.
Yes.
Which I think we probably know intuitively. Mm-hmm. But that's maybe a really practical way of sort of, you know, proving that to be true.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, that's what that's bringing up for me.
I love that perspective, that insight into thinking how our minds are connected to our ego.
Mm-hmm.
And how our mind can't stray too far from the ego.
Yeah, the just mind like Mercury is maybe limited by the ego.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just like Mercury is limited by the sun. It's never too far from the sun. Mm-hmm. It's always close to the sun. And so Mercury is here with the sun and Pluto in Aquarius for the first time since 1797. All three together. Where Pluto, you know, strays far from the sun because it's further from the sun. Where Mercury stays close to the sun because it's close to the sun. But with Mercury, the sun, and Pluto all transiting through Aquarius, and specifically Mercury, Aquarius is about broadening your perspective or really seeing the value in the perspective of others.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, you have your ideas, I have my ideas. They may be different ideas, but good. It's good that they're different ideas.
Mm-hmm.
We're meant to have different ideas. And so Mercury conjunct Pluto in Aquarius is hopefully helping transform our way of thinking. This is a transit that is going to be revisited for the next 20 years, annually, for the next 20 years, where it didn't happen for 227 years. And now for the next 20 years, it's going to happen every year.
Would you say that this is supporting us in understanding the need for diversity?
Yes.
Like diversity of thought, yes. But also diversity on a larger scale.
Yes. 100%. Yeah. It's like embracing different thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Different thoughts. What makes your thought unique to you?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question. What makes your thoughts unique to you? And so often, like in our society, we're being pigeonholed into you're on this side or you're on that side. And it's mm-hmm. like, I'm not on any side. I'm just here. And I have my thoughts. And sometimes I think about that side. I'm like, that's a good point over there. But then I look at that side. I'm like, that's a good point over there.
Hmm.
I don't necessarily subscribe to either of those points. Or maybe I subscribe to 35% of that and, you know, 25% to that. And the other 40% is me.
Mm-hmm.
Something different.
Yeah, there can be a limitation. I guess you're referring to politics.
That's kind of the simple example.
The simple example, yeah. Of there being kind of only two choices.
Yes.
And I think we see this a lot. Like, we see fewer choices than we really have available to mm-hmm. us. So part of this consciousness coming in is hopefully going to help us get out of some black and white thinking
mm-hmm.
that we have, that we get sort of stuck in.
Yes, exactly. Get you out of the black and white thinking.
Mm-hmm. And black and white thinking, like from a therapeutic perspective, typically happens as a trauma response, which is interesting to consider.
Mm.
When you consider, are we collectively in a trauma response?
What does that mean, in a trauma response? Why would somebody go into black and white thinking because of a trauma response? Would that be because the trauma has forced them into sort of a binary decision?
I think it happens because you have to be in a regulated, balanced state to be able to hold nuance.
Yeah, nuance.
And to hold Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a response to trauma, I think, as well, because when something happens to us that's traumatic, mm-hmm. the first response is that it's bad. Mm-hmm. And that's completely fair. Mm-hmm. But as we sit with trauma, sometimes over the years, we're able to see ways that it actually served us on a total level, with maybe something we were needing to learn, or there's a way it got us to where we were going. And I would say that's an example of maybe in the longer term, the trauma can support you in being able to see the nuance and seeing the black, the white, and the gray. Seeing the full spectrum of the situation. Mm-hmm. But when it first happens, I think it's natural to kind of fall back into that black and white thinking. This is good. This is bad. Because we want to reach for the good things to help us feel better.
Right.
We also see black and white thinking in children before they've developed an ability to see the nuance. So in some ways, that trauma response puts us back into our child mind. There's a theory called object relations theory that refers to the infant's relationship with their mother and the process of breastfeeding as the good breast and the bad breast. And it's really sort of highlighting that binary thinking is really the thinking that we all start with. So like for the infant, a full stomach is good, an empty stomach is bad. Like that's how they're orienting towards the world. And that's how also how they're orienting towards the primary attachment figure, which is usually the mother, through the experience of breastfeeding. So it's interesting to think about the process of eating or the process of consuming, whether it's food or information, can sort of feed that binary. Like when you're consuming media information about politics, for example, just to use that as an example because it's such a clear split, you're being fed information. And, you know, depending on what news channel you're watching, it's either good or it's bad, depending on who's talking about what. So in a way, it's sort of bringing us back to our infancy.
But why would one breast be good and one breast be bad?
Because that's the binary.
Does the child really think this breast is good, that breast is bad? Is one breast giving more food than the other?
I we're not parents, so my firsthand experience is not of that.
Well, I'm just asking from like the psychological perspective.
Well, this is one theoretical orientation, you know, and there are many in the psychology world. So not everybody is oriented this way. This is just one idea, one perspective.
You're saying that the binary thought pattern goes back to infancy. And that when you're an infant, or if you're an adult and you're in that fear response, you are going to go back to more of a binary way of thinking. This is good, that's bad. And what the Mercury and Pluto conjunct in Aquarius is doing is helping transform our thought patterns beyond the binary and to help us think outside the box, to help us see things from a unique perspective, and in understanding that this is a transit that's going to be happening annually for the next 20 years when it hasn't happened for 227 years. So this is just the beginning. In 20 years, hopefully, society, collectively, each individual is seeing things from their own unique perspective, and we've gotten out of that binary red versus blue thought pattern.
But in order to be able to see the value of diverse thought in others, we have to first be able to experience it ourselves.
Yes.
Which is what the transit is.
That's what it's doing.
Is your highlighting mind. Your mind.
Your mind. Transforming your mind. And so,
And
go ahead.
And I think there could be some
like cognitive dissonance happening.
What does that mean?
Talked about that term before. It's the mind likes what it likes, just like the ego has a tendency to want to hold us in at sort of our level of awareness. And so there could be some resistance or some dissonance in this process.
I don't want to be out of the binary thought patterns. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this for my whole life. It's what I'm comfortable with. Well, Aquarius is about progressing us into a future. Mm-hmm. Into the future where we can be more independent. And so it's embracing differences in divergent thoughts.
It is. And I would say the consciousness that has come in around neurodiversity, specifically around autism, that there's a spectrum, is really the beginning of this coming in. Hmm. That it's not black or white. Mm-hmm. It's not you have autism or you don't.
There's a spectrum.
There's a spectrum.
Many different colors on the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
It's not black or white. It's an infinite number of shades.
Right. And I think that's been really uncomfortable for people. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. I think it's more well understood and accepted with autism, mm-hmm. just as an example. But this concept now that there is a spectrum of sexuality and gender is still a pretty polarizing topic for people.
Well, it's going to be something that I think that society is going to become much more used to it as we move into Pluto in Aquarius.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to become commonplace for people just to not even care about people's gender or sexual orientation. It's going to be one of the, I think in 20 years, people are going to be like, why do you need to announce your gender or sexual orientation? It's just like, we're all people and everything is fluid. Everything is unique because, you know, when you think of homosexuality, which, you know, now today sounds very almost kind of vanilla, it's ruled by Aquarius. And Aquarius, the reason why Aquarius rules homosexuality is because Aquarius is ruled by Uranus. And Uranus is that Venus symbol flipped upside down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's what makes your senses unique. Aquarius mm-hmm. is the sign of nonconformity. Being different, whether it has to do with your gender identification or your sexuality, that's what Aquarius is all about.
Mm-hmm.
There is no identification. The identification is you.
Mm.
And however you identify is unique to you. Mm-hmm. It's not even, you know, but at the same time, you could look at Aquarius and say, well, Aquarius is also about the group. So you have different groups that identify in terms of gender and sexuality or sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in 20 years, those groups are going to be even more fluid and open,
mm-hmm.
where maybe, you know, and maybe this is just in my idealism, is that everyone is just accepted for who they are, however they identify, doesn't need to be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And people are more comfortable with what makes each individual unique.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've never heard of anyone that's like that. Cool. Mm-hmm. You know, not like, well, why are you like that? That doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't fit into my binary thought patterns.
Yeah, I think that part of the reason why there's such tension right now around this topic is that we don't have the language to describe mm-hmm. what's going on.
Exactly.
And so we need new words. We need new language to describe how people are experiencing themselves. And that's a birthing process,
and so
which is not necessarily easy.
Exactly. And so again, Mercury, the planet of the mind, the planet that rules communication, words, Pluto transforming the mind. By this transit, Pluto conjunct Mercury in Aquarius every year for the next 20 years. In 20 years, we're going to have the vocabulary. There is going to be words that don't exist right now
mm-hmm.
that will be commonplace in 20 years that if we heard them now, we'd be like, what are they even talking about? Mm-hmm. I don't know what that means. But in 20 years, we will know what it means. And because we have the language, like you're saying, it won't be so uncomfortable for people to articulate the the frustration. Like you said, I think you bring up a great point. A lot of the frustration is my mind has always known this. My language has always been around this. And now you're telling me I have to change the whole way that I'm thinking and speaking. Mm-hmm. That's a major inconvenience. I don't want to do that. But as new generations come up in this period of Pluto and Aquarius, it's going to be more commonplace, the new language and the way that people are viewed, that it's not going to be as big of a deal as it is right now.
Yeah, well, and on some level, this is already happening in, there are always younger generations who have terms and language that older generations don't understand.
Exactly. But now it's going to be even, it's like a quantum leap.
Well, now now the consciousness is maybe more collective in the sense that it's time for everyone to up level and get on board.
Yes. This kind of leads me to what I want to move into a question because I know we normally do questions at the end, but somebody asked a question that I feel is really pertinent to this sort of transit before we move on to another transit. This very nice message and question is from Christine or Christine. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. I'm sorry if I'm not, but thank you for the message. She says, greetings both. Would love to hear your thoughts about Pluto in Aquarius squaring the natal placements of Pluto in Scorpio. Thank you for this platform. You're welcome. I love this question because this is literally something that I wanted to bring up last week, but I felt like, okay, there's not enough time because I really wanted to address this squaring of Pluto and Aquarius is going to square everyone who was born between 1983-84 and 1995 was born with Pluto in Scorpio. So over these next 20 years, Pluto in Aquarius is going to square off with the natal Pluto of everyone born between 1984 and 1995. Major transformations occurring for those born with Pluto in Scorpio, as Pluto in Aquarius squares that natal placement. We've talked about the tension between Aquarius and Scorpio, maybe, but we didn't really touch on like the nuances of Pluto in Scorpio being squared by Pluto in Aquarius. And when you think of Scorpio, Scorpio's fixed water, Pluto's fixed air. They're both fixed. They make a strong aspect to each other, but air and water don't mix. That creates tension. That's a square. It's a 90-degree angle. When Pluto squares Aquarius, it's a difficult transformation. And this difficult transformation for everyone that was born with Pluto and Scorpio is going to occur over like a 3-year period. Because that's how long it will take for Pluto to square your Pluto, then move back and square it again and so on and so forth. So, but the Scorpion is hiding in the cracks, the crevices. It's under the rock where the water bearer is out in the open, social, a part of the community. So this Pluto in Aquarius squaring Pluto in Scorpio is going to challenge the private nature of those born with Pluto and Scorpio, because they're going to be pushed into the community. It's like all the Scorpions are going to be rounded up and brought into the town square. These are like the arch nemesis of those born with Pluto and Leo. The Pluto and Leo people were like, they showed up on planet Earth. These were the people that were born between 1937 and 1957. They showed up on planet Earth and they're like, nah, man, this is not good for us. We're taking the world over. We're going to be out in the streets marching for our rights and all this stuff. And what's happened? We've had Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Donald Trump, Joe Biden. Like, we can't get rid of these Pluto and Leo people. They will not leave the throne. Like, they're like, I'm the king. I'm not leaving the throne. I don't care that I'm 70-something years old, 80. I'm still going to be president. It's the truth.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, so.
Over my dead body, literally.
Yeah, over my dead body. So you think about, what did Pluto in Scorpio, what did that generation do that pissed off all the Pluto in Leo people?
What?
The internet. Hmm. No more brick and mortars. It's like, well, we got Amazon. We got, you know, the internet. We'll just buy everything. We're just going to sit behind our computers all day in our crevices in the corner of the darkness of our apartment, and we're just going to be doing everything behind the keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's dating or shopping or whatever it is, everything is online now. Why is that?
Mm-hmm.
Because Pluto and Scorpio.
Cyberbullying is maybe a shadow part of that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's all Pluto and Scorpio. So now Pluto and Aquarius comes around, and what's going to happen? It's going to force all these scorpions out of their dark crevices and going to force them to be social.
Hmm. That includes me.
Do you like being social?
It depends on the day.
Yeah. No. You don't.
I love being connected with my clients, of course.
That's not really being social.
But that's not the same. That's not the same.
So yeah, you're going to be forced out into the world.
Hmm.
And you're going to be forced to engage with other people face to face, to interact. And, you know, part of the reason why Pluto and Scorpio doesn't like this is because this generation is incredibly sensitive. Born with Pluto in the sign that it rules, Scorpio, the deepest, darkest, most passionate sign. There's an exposure to being born with Pluto and Scorpio. This is a psychic generation. They pick up all the psychic energies around them. Like, okay, I see all this happening. I need to hide over here, be over here. I'm only safe behind my computer. There's a reason why they're wanting to hide or be hidden. Because of the sensitivity that they feel. And that's going to be the discomfort, is being forced to be out in public, in social situations, or being involved in groups or the community in some way, and then having to deal with all the psychic energies that are being tossed around.
Hmm. But luckily, we'll all be in it together. So hopefully that will make it a little better.
Scorpions. Mm-hmm. Army of Scorpions. So, you know, you in 2035, when the early part of the Scorpio generations, I mean, they're going to be, wow, at that point, they'll be 50. They'll be 50 and they'll be like, man, kids these days, I don't like all this social stuff. Yeah, I know. I just want to go back to my computer and do
back
the
to
online
my gaming
and dating online, and the good old days when we could buy everything on Amazon, you know. Man, I want that again.
I did most of my grad school, as you know, online.
Yeah,
because exactly. it was during COVID, and it was what we had to do. Mm-hmm. That's how we started. And I think it was about 60% of the program, 65% was remote.
Mm.
And then they started offering, there were a couple quarters where you could go in person if you wanted to, but you didn't have to yet.
Yeah. And Gabriella was like, no, you're not going to take me away from my home.
Yeah, so I'm just relating. I guess I'm like, oh, it's going to be like that on a larger scale.
Yeah.
But, you know, once I got to campus at the very last quarter that was possible, you know, I waited. Yeah. I waited like, until the very end.
You? Yeah.
Until they forced me.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of us sort of who clung on and to the end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was this experience of feeling left behind, and like that last quarter especially, where it was kind of split.
Mm-hmm.
And once I got to campus, I couldn't imagine not being there. I was upset that I hadn't gone sooner.
Mm.
So there was a real, yeah.
So it's like, well, did you feel like you missed out?
I felt like I missed out, and I just felt like being in person, there was so much more richness in the relationships between my cohort members and I.
Mm-hmm.
Just the amount of connection. I mean, there were times where it was overwhelming too.
because in between classes, when you're just remote, you can just be by yourself. You can lie down. You can take a nap if you need to. Mm-hmm. I mean, going through a program, getting a master's in counseling psychology is intense because it's a lot of introspection and dealing with your own stuff. Mm. But when you're in person, you know, people want to chat with you during the breaks. Mm-hmm. You're chatting with someone in line for the bathroom. Like, there's no downtime mm-hmm. unless you really seek it out, like right. go back to your room. So in some ways, the stimulation was really welcomed and I enjoyed it. And in other ways, it was like, wow, I really need to just turn off and get a break.
Well, and I think that's part of what we're learning with this Pluto and Aquarius transit is, what is my place within the structure of the community
mm-hmm.
and how can I be a part of it and contribute in the way that I need to in order to hold myself accountable for what I'm responsible for, but at the same time, not overly give. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the maybe stressor points of being born with Pluto in Scorpio, is that there's no boundaries.
I was just going to say that Scorpio energy doesn't know boundaries.
No, there's no boundaries. A scorpion will crawl up the back of your shirt, you know? So it can get into all these deep areas that no other symbol of the 12 signs can.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe the tough lesson is sort of what you experienced a little bit in that time at Pacifica, where you're like, okay, I like being social, but I also need to know when to turn it off and separate myself. And, oh God, sorry, Aquarius people, if don't be offended by this, please. Detach from the feeling mm-hmm. of what's going on there. Because Scorpio is all passion.
Mm-hmm.
And Aquarius is logic. So it's about engaging without being dependent on the other person mm-hmm. or them being dependent on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed how there were some of us who needed to like go back to our room and take breaks.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I would need like multiple hours to take a break before like a night class or something. Yeah. But other of my classmates were just social the whole time. They were just on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were the ones who had either Aquarius energy or had more like extroverted
mm-hmm.
placements.
Exactly.
In their chart. So
yes.
Yeah. It is a process of finding where your boundary is. And I think sometimes finding boundaries is a process of like going too far and overstepping.
Mm-hmm.
And learning sort of the hard way.
Right.
Sometimes. Yeah. And really just having to be gentle with yourself if you do have a boundary that's different from the group.
Right.
To really honor that. Because when you overextend yourself, then you're not really part of the community. Mm. You're not putting your best foot forward. It's not really benefiting the group.
Mm. Right. Because you're not being yourself.
Yeah. You're overstretched.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're trying to fit in,
mm-hmm.
which is maybe what Scorpio is trying to do. It's the shapeshifter. So it's trying to fit in and conform and be what the group thinks the group wants it to be. It's the chameleon. Mm-hmm. I need to look like the group. But the Aquarius energy is like, just be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just be yourself. Don't try to be like me. Be you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, good lessons.
Yes, yes. So thank you, Christine. Thank you so much for that question and for the well wishes. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
So the next transit that we're talking about involves three planets in the North Node. It's the Sun, the giver of light, life, and vitality, transiting through the fixed air signs symbolized by the water bearer that we've been talking about, Aquarius. It also involves Venus, Lady Luck, the goddess of love and beauty, the planet of relationships, transiting through the cardinal earth signs symbolized by the goat, Capricorn. Both of these planets are aligning with Chiron, the wound, and the ancient wisdom that is unlocked through healing that wound. They're aligning with Uranus, the primordial sky god, the planet of revolution, rebellion, innovation, independence, and the unexpected. And they're aligning with the North Node. Chiron and the North Node are both transiting through the cardinal fire sign symbolized by the ram, Aries, and Uranus is transiting through the fixed earth sign symbolized by the bull, Taurus. So it's actually four planets in the North Node that are aligning. The four planets are the Sun, Venus, aligning with Uranus and Chiron, and then the North Node is aligning with the Sun and Venus as well.
And what days?
This is basically happening, like when you put all the transits together, this is a frequency that is persisting throughout the week from last Saturday all the way until this Friday.
Okay, so it's pretty...
So it's a theme for the week.
A full theme, okay.
It's a full theme for the week. So when you think about the Sun in Aquarius aligning with Chiron and the North Node, Chiron and the North Node in Aries, this is fears, insecurities, doubts, and fears of being yourself. So when you think of the Sun in Aquarius, it's the Sun is bringing that light, life, and vitality to the group. Aligning with Chiron in the North Node in Aries is saying, who are you within the group? How do you identify within the group? And if you don't know, where are those doubts coming from? Fear? You can't really say who you are in the group. You have to think about it because you have to think about this person, that person. Well, I want to be like them, but I also want to be like them. I'm not really sure. How can you be yourself? And then you add in Uranus, which is the planetary ruler of Aquarius, transiting through Taurus. That is encouraging you to be yourself at all costs. Whatever it takes, be yourself. Be you. Embrace your individuality based on your self-worth, your values, your likes and dislikes. Then there's Venus in Capricorn, climbing the mountain of your relationships. Who are you on this journey with? How are they helping you ascend towards your goals? How are you helping them ascend towards their goals? What's the exchange?
And are you in relationships with people you can be yourself around?
Boom. Yes. Love that. Exactly. That's what these transits are doing all week. This is the soup. This is the theme of the week. How can you be yourself in your groups, in your relationships, in whatever it is you're working to achieve, whatever community you're a part of, you're being called to be yourself and to support others in being themselves as well. It's not just you being yourself and wanting other people to support you, it's also you supporting them. So celebrating people for their differences, celebrating people for what makes them unique, even if it's something that's like, I don't like that, but is it really harming you in some way? If the greatest harm that it's doing is it's making you feel a little uncomfortable because it's different, then learn to embrace and celebrate that difference.
Well, it's kind of what we were talking about at the beginning of this episode with the mind. Where in order to respect and appreciate diversity in others, you have to embrace your own diversity.
That's it. So you accept yourself and what makes you unique. It's going to help you accept others and what makes them unique. Because if you're in that shadow side of Aquarius and you're like, well, she's not wearing the clothes that I like, or she doesn't have the same views that I like, you're sort of bullying that person into being a certain way.
And so you're probably doing it to yourself too.
That's it. Exactly.
Yeah. That's the reflection.
Okay.
Okay. So there's the potential for some, you use this word revolution or revelation at the beginning of this episode. Yes. And I think there could be a harsh reality for some of us who are maybe not being authentic or not being ourselves or are not allowing for the exploration of who you're becoming. You know, if that answer is no, that you're in, that you're climbing the mountain with people who aren't letting you expand, change, grow, transform, that's going to be pretty tough to acknowledge. And
and to determine, is that something you can transform in the relationship or not? Or do you need to part ways with those individuals?
Face your fears, whatever mm-hmm. they are, and you'll find the answer at the other end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
Beautiful.
Yes. The third transit of the week, Mars, the god of war, the planet of action, aggression, and conflict, transiting through Capricorn, the sign where it is exalted, forming a sextile, a positive aspect with Neptune, the god of fresh water and the sea, the planet of illusion, deception, compassion, and intuition, in the mutable water sign symbolized by the fish, Pisces. This is a transit that is occurring from Sunday to Saturday, February 4th to the 10th. So again, this is happening all week.
The whole week too.
Yes. And this is a really nice transit that is helping facilitate or assist you in facing your fears. Because Mars is the planet of courage. It's giving you the courage to climb up the mountain to the highest point of your success, your achievement. It's aligning with Neptune, which is giving you that element of compassion for your dreams. My dreams matter. Having more courage within your unconscious. So wherever you're feeling maybe doubts or shame or regret or blame with regards to all these fears that we're talking about with Chiron and Aries and the group and the friendships or the relationships, Mars in Capricorn aligning with Neptune in Pisces is giving you the courage to manifest your dreams and to say that I don't really know how, but I believe, and I know if I just keep working towards my goals and ambitions, that good things are going to come. I'm going to find my way to the top of the mountain. Maybe I don't know who I'm going to be with, but I know it's going to be amazing.
So it's offering hope and faith and trust
on the climb,
in the process. Yeah, yes, on the climb.
Exactly. Exactly. So really use this energy to have the courage, to harness the courage to work towards your goals, but also to work towards the faith necessary to achieve those goals. Belief.
Yeah.
What is the status of your belief, your faith?
That's a big one.
Yes. And then continuing on that sort of path, the fourth transit of the week, Saturn, the planetary ruler of Capricorn, the god of wealth and time, the planet of restriction, responsibility, hard work, achievement, and authority, transits out of its retrograde shadow in Pisces on February 7th. So on February 7th, Saturn is now moving into new space. You know, it's kind of been stuck in this area. It moved into its retrograde shadow on March 11th of 2023.
Okay.
So from March 11th, 2023 to February 7th, 2024.
Almost a year.
Saturn has been at the first 7 degrees of Pisces. It's finally moving beyond that point. So the dream is being released in a sense. There's been this restriction to the dream. If you were born with a key point or planet in a water sign, an earth sign, a mutable sign between 0 and 7 degrees, maybe your dream has been restricted in some way. But now as Saturn moves beyond degree 7 out of its shadow, those areas of your chart are being released.
Would that indicate some dreams coming to fruition,
Could be, sure. Sure. You know, it could be dreams coming into fruition, could be dreams coming into fruition, even if Saturn is transiting in alignment with one of your planets, because Saturn is the planet of reality. And so the planet of reality transiting through the sign of dreams can be, I look at it as two different ways. On one hand, you could, maybe dreams aren't coming true. On the other hand, maybe they are. If they're not coming true, it's because there's a restriction happening there. That's Saturn. But if they are coming true, that's also Saturn, where it's bringing the dream into reality.
But so the dream could also look different in reality than it did in the dream space.
That's a great point.
So there could be a, like, be careful what you wish for.
Yes, there definitely
kind of
could
a
be that
component to this.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah. If you haven't fully thought through the dream or like what kind of a domino effect that could produce.
Absolutely. Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. So Saturn is now moving forward and it's not going to enter its retrograde shadow until March 23rd. and that will be at 12 degrees. So really, from the 7 to 12 degree point is an area where Saturn's covering very quickly in like basically a month and a half. But then it's from 12 to 19 degrees from March 23rd to February 18th of 2025. So from March 23rd to February 18th of 2025, Saturn's going to be between 12 and 19 degrees.
So it gets kind of stuck again?
Yes, because that's where Yes. But, you know, that's areas where we need work.
Yeah.
So, you know, I bring up the degrees because, like, for those of you that are aware of your astrological code, I encourage you to look at the degrees in your chart, especially in water signs, Cancer, Scorpio, Pisces, earth signs, which is Capricorn, Taurus, and Virgo, and the mutable signs, which in addition to Virgo and Pisces also includes Gemini and Sagittarius. Look at what is in your chart at the degrees that I've mentioned. So if it's 0 to 7, then that's the work that you were doing this last year from March to February. Mm-hmm. If it's 7 to 12, that's quick work that you're doing right now from February 7th to March 23rd. If it's 12 to 19, that's a long-term assignment that you're dealing with from March 23rd of this year to February 18th of next year. Mm-hmm. So it's going to show you what you're working on. And like the simple example is Venus. If you were born with Venus in Sagittarius, let's say, at 15 degrees, that means that you have hard work to do in your relationships, maybe in being more compassionate, empathetic, or having faith when Saturn is transiting in a square to your Venus. So if you're curious to know how any of these transits, or specifically these Saturnian transits, are or have been affecting you or will be affecting you moving forward, I encourage you to contact me for a reading at theweeklytransit.com. For our final transit this week, the pinnacle, this is what we've all been waiting for. This is sort of the main transit of the week that I didn't even tease at the top. But if you saw the title, you know what we're going to be talking about. The new moon in Aquarius. And if you're listening to this now, there may still be time for you to sign up for the moon cycle classes if you're curious to know how the lunar cycle is going to be affecting you directly. Go to theweeklytransit.com, and under classes, you can enroll in my moon cycle classes, where we will cover this transit, the full moon in Virgo, which is in 2 weeks, and how they are affecting you directly and how to work with the energy. So the new moon in Aquarius occurs on February 9th at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This is setting your intentions for the coming cycle. And it kind of goes along with the themes that we've been talking about through this whole episode.
It really does.
How do I want to be involved in the community? Who am I within the group construct? How can I embrace my independence, my individuality? How am I innovative? How am I being innovative?
How am I different?
How am I different? Mm-hmm. How am I embracing what makes me unique? And how am I celebrating the uniqueness in others? Like Gabriella said, if you're not celebrating the uniqueness in others, then you're probably not celebrating it within yourself. So it all boils back to you and how you are engaging in the community. Remember, if we're going to the potluck, we all want to bring something unique. Mm-hmm. We don't want to all bring the same dish.
Right.
It's about being yourself. So how can I be myself? And when you're thinking ahead and setting your intentions, where do you want to be? Or ask yourself, where do I want to be by February 24th of this year during the full moon in Virgo? Where do I want to be by August 19th of 2024? During the full moon in Aquarius? And where do I want to be by January 29th, 2025, which is the next new moon in Aquarius? So what are your goals and ambitions with regards to innovation, independence, individuality, and what you're contributing to the group, the club, the organization, the social network, the social cause, the community?
Mm-hmm. I think it's important to remember that a community, a healthy, thriving, diverse community, is made up of individuals.
Yes.
And I see this becoming, speaking of, you know, binary or black and white thinking,
this sort of push-pull between we're too individualistic as a culture and we need to be more focused on the collective. And I would say it's both. Mm-hmm. And we need to be really careful about swinging the pendulum from one extreme to the other.
Yes.
When the reality is it's both.
Yes.
It's not this or that Mm-mm. anymore. It's this and that.
Yes, absolutely.
And if we've been leaning towards being too individualistic, it's because we don't really understand yet the nature of a healthy and diverse community. Mm-hmm. But the answer is not to abandon your individuality. Mm. And it's not to stop doing your own inner work.
Yes.
It's to understand how that inner work is going to help you in the community, how there's that mirroring that's going on between the individual and the group.
Beautiful.
If we swing the pendulum to the opposite side and we start putting the community before ourselves, we're going to have a whole other set of problems.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is if you're putting the community in front of yourself, who's in charge of the community? You know, who's the one that says the community needs this, so you have to give that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, I just think of like the French Revolution, you know, one of the leaders of the French Revolution, Robespierre, was the one who was like screaming, off with your head, off with their heads.
Jeez.
Guess how he died?
His head?
Yeah. You know, so that is not the attitude to have. is that it's for the good of the group. You know, it's like the good of the group is that everybody's doing their own thing and we're coexisting. We're understanding mm-hmm. that we're all stuck here together. So let's just be respectful of one another. Mm-hmm. You have a different point of view than I do. And I don't really like your point of view, but are you doing anything to disrespect me? No. Okay. Well, then I don't have a problem with you. You mm-hmm. can have your perspective, your belief. I don't agree with it. I think it actually sucks. But you know what? I still respect you because mm-hmm. you respect me.
Yeah.
That's it.
I think we have to be really careful to kind of pull back our idealization that we have around people who overgive.
Yeah.
And look at the reality that we have so many people who struggle from people pleasing because it's unfortunately a trait that is celebrated. You know, you hear all the time, oh, they do everything for their family, you know, to their own detriment. They mm-hmm. do things for everyone else
They
do things for everyone else before they do anything for themselves mm-hmm. as if it's an attribute.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're celebrating that overgiving, like that giving from a place of emptiness, we're not going to be able to understand this Aquarius energy in a healthy expression.
Right.
And like you've said, there's a way that we can approach this in a more balanced and healthy way, or there's a way that we can approach it through the shadow side. And I think we really have to look at the stories that we're telling ourselves around the balance between, you know, being an individual and being a part of a group. Hmm. Because the reality is it's both.
Mm-hmm. It's both.
It's both.
And I think about like this, going back to that question earlier about Pluto and Scorpio being squared by Pluto and Aquarius, and it makes me think about what you're saying here with like the overgiving, you know, like the Scorpio energy, there's no boundaries. And Scorpio people can be easily drained if they're not protecting themselves energetically
mm-hmm.
because they don't see the difference between you and me. We're one. Mm-hmm. I love you, you know? And so maybe part of what the Scorpio generation can teach the collective is how to protect themselves energetically
mm-hmm.
in the group and not overgive Or maybe that's what the Scorpio generation is learning, mm-hmm. is to not overgive, to not be so completely vulnerable and exposed.
I think once they learn that lesson, they can become the teachers of mm-hmm. it, because they have that embodied wisdom of what that experience of finding the boundary is like.
And so maybe that's the two sides of the square, you know? Like, before those who are born with Pluto and Scorpio, before Pluto and Aquarius squares their Pluto, maybe they're giving too much. They're overgiving. But when the squaring happens, they learn some hard lessons that teach them how to protect themselves within the community, within the group, so that they're not going to get squashed mm-hmm. like the Scorpion.
Right. Yeah. So there could be, I think, with some of these transits, like the shadow side.
All of them.
Might be showing up. You know, the shadow side of Aquarius is sort of, it's this expression, you know, called groupthink.
Groupthink.
Where you get really wrapped up in.
In the echo chamber.
The way that the collective is thinking.
Yes.
And like, I see this sometimes, like on Instagram, where everyone's resharing the same stories mm-hmm. and it starts to feel really, it is like this echo chamber mm-hmm. of sort of. Like just this one, it's like hitting one note over and over yes. again on a piano
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's always problematic. I mean, sometimes it's a beautiful message that's being shared, but I think there's just a line. Mm-hmm. Like I always notice it when it happens. And when I want to sort of jump on that bandwagon, I check in with myself. Is this really authentic to me, or am I doing it to get approval from my peers?
Great question. Great question.
I don't always know the answer right away, but typically if I don't know the answer,
you're probably doing it for your peers.
It means it's probably not authentically yeah, aligned
exactly
with me.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Exactly. Because authenticity is that Aries energy, and the Ram doesn't think, it just hits, because mm-hmm. it knows I want to be the strongest. I want to be the leader.
Yeah.
And so when you think about these other transits with the Sun in Aquarius aligning with Chiron and the North Node in Aries and Venus in Capricorn doing the same, we're being given sort of this mix
mm-hmm.
leading up to the new moon in Aquarius, where we're taking a strong look at ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
The individuals that we're connected to and the groups that we're a part of, and we're seeing how it all fits together.
Mm-hmm.
And does it fit in relation to me?
Yeah.
And with Uranus and Taurus too, what does this have to do with my values? I'm a part of this group, this club, this organization. Am I in this group because my friend's in this group? Or am I in this group because the values of the group resonate with my values?
Mm-hmm. Well, one way to kind of explore this in sort of a maybe a safe space to sort of challenge and expand your ability to kind of tolerate different viewpoints, I think, speaking of Instagram, is social media
mm-hmm.
is a really interesting place to determine, am I in an echo chamber of the same thoughts? Like, have I created, you know, how is my virtual community maybe reflecting my actual community?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like the answer, if you feel like everyone is saying the same thing, you can kind of start to branch out and just sort of notice that what that experience is like for you. I mean, I've done this intentionally with a few of the accounts that I follow where I don't completely agree with their perspective, but it's different enough from mine where I do care about the other perspective. I respect that person. I might not agree with them, but I keep them in my feed because it's something for me to like bump up against mm-hmm. and just check in about. Is this still a no for me? Or like, how does this sit with my belief system? And for a while, I was sort of unfollowing everybody who kind of rubbed me the wrong way. And then you end up with it's not interesting.
Right.
It's not it's interesting bland. Anymore.
It's all the same perspectives over and over again.
Yeah.
So you're actually tapping into that Aquarius energy, which is like, let me hear some divergent voices or some voices that are different from mine, mm-hmm. different from what I follow. Let's get a variety of perspectives here so that I can really think about where I fit in or if I fit in at all, or maybe I don't fit in and I'm just observing the conversation between these two different or these multiple different viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they're not conversing with each other, they're sort of conversing with me passively through the social media. But it's giving you a broader perspective, which is what Aquarius is about. It's about broadening your perspective.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's, you know, one of the benefits of social media. I know it gets a bad reputation sometimes, and I certainly understand the shadow side of it too, but it's sort of a micro environment, like a micro of maybe the way that you're showing up in a macro sense mm-hmm. in like your in-person communities.
Yeah.
And it can kind of give you an opportunity like to test things out, you know, work on sort of your relationship with that cognitive dissonance, like in the comfort of your own home.
From a safe place.
From a safe place.
Scorpio, Pluto, Scorpio place. It's you're in your home. You're just on your phone.
Yeah.
You know, you're not out there in public, but it's giving you some practice and mm-hmm. sort of seeing how you experience different viewpoints.
Absolutely. Yeah. So just one idea if you want to dip your toe into this.
Yes.
In a safe, what feels like a safer way.
Working with that different perspective and the Aquarius energy and different viewpoints and non-binary and all this sort of stuff takes me to this question that we got from Jackie, who asked this great question. With Pluto entering Aquarius, as well as the United States Chiron return happening in an election year, it feels a bit ominous, but also exciting, maybe. Would love to hear what you both have to say, feel about this as it pertains to the collective for 2024. So this is one of those funny things where it's like when you're thinking about, and yes, it's the United States Chiron return. Chiron return happens later this year. Chiron was at 20 degrees in Aries when at the signing of the Declaration of Independence. It will be at 20 degrees this year. So the United States having its Chiron return, well, what does that mean? We're facing our fears. It's like as collectively as a country, we're facing our fears, our insecurities. And this isn't the first Chiron return for the United States. This has happened multiple times because it happens every 50 years. So the last Chiron return for the United States was back in the 1970s, which was during another sort of existential crisis of the United States, the Vietnam War, the Nixon impeachment. You know, it's like the United States was having a crisis of its identity, of who am I? You know, collectively we're asking, who are we as a country? But when you think of Pluto being in Aquarius, and I should go back and look. So, I mean, yeah, George Washington was president during Pluto in Aquarius, which no one ran against him. He was just, he was funny. The guy. But this year it seems a little different because there's so many different candidates. Like, okay, there's, you know, there's going to be whatever the main Democratic candidate is, whether it's Biden or someone else. And then there's going to be the main Republican candidate, whoever that's going to be. And that's a binary choice, red right. or blue.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have these two outliers. You've got Donald Trump, who's back, but is kind of like persona non grata. They're not allowing him to be in the debates or those sorts of things. He's not on the ballot in certain states. They're trying to make it so that he can't run, so that he can't be elected president again. But he's going to do whatever he can to find his way onto the ballot and be a force in the election. But then there's also Robert Kennedy Jr., who is an independent candidate who seems to have a strong following as well. Like from the you know, from the social media perspective, it seems like those are the two biggest candidates, are Trump and RFK Jr., because those are the ones that are, I'm seeing most of the time. But
when it's interesting that they're both sort of displaced in some way.
Exactly. So like my point is that, you know, is there going to be two candidates in the November election, or is there going to be three or four candidates? You know, there may be multiple candidates, which is a very sort of Aquarius, non-binary, outside the box. Things are different. This is the weirdest election we've ever had sort of feeling. And who are we as a country? That's what I'm sort of experiencing in thinking about these transits and what I'm seeing out there in the world in this country.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder in terms of the Chiron return, I guess my question is, what would you consider the United States wound to be?
Well, the thing, where's Chiron? Chiron's in Aries. So the United States has a wound to its self-confidence. It has a wound to its personality, to its, this is a very insecure country, you know? I mean, like on the shadow side, on the light side, like this is a country that is very confident and self-loving, but on the shadow side, it's very insecure. It's like, USA, USA, you know, it's like, we have to be the best. USA, we're the best. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, it's like how people get like really kind of nutty, where it's like, we have to be the best and we have to be involved in everybody's business. You know, we know what's best. We need to tell the other countries what they need to do and so on and so forth. There's an insecurity there.
Yeah. A superiority complex.
Superiority complex, where it's like, we're insecure about who we are, so we have to tell other people how they have to be, rather than just kicking back and being like, this is who we are. We're, yeah, whatever, you do you, we're going to do us. No, we're involved in everyone's business because we're so insecure about ourselves. You know, and you think of like all these three-letter sort of government agencies that are all about, you know, watching people and paranoia and all this sort of stuff. It's insecurity, fear, fear that we're going to be attacked, that somebody's out to get us, that, you know, nobody's safe. We have to, you know, nobody's safe until every bad person that breathes on the planet Earth that doesn't like the United States is handled and taken care of. You know, there's a lot of fear. Mm-hmm. This country has a lot of fear.
Yeah.
So we have to face our fears and learn to love ourselves collectively as a country for all the good, the bad, and the ugly that this country has done, is doing, and will do in the future.
Mm-hmm. Didn't you say once, too, that the birth chart of the United States, that the United States is a Leo? The North Node is in Leo.
The North Node is in Leo. For the United States.
Okay. And yes. The sun is in Cancer.
The sun is in Cancer. So super emotional.
Yeah, that tracks.
Emotional planet, or emotional country. The moon was in Aquarius. So, you know, the United States is emotionally fulfilled by equality, individualism. It's like my dad said, you know, when I was growing up, he would always tell me, you know what made the United States a great country? Individuals. Individuals is what made the United States a great country. Individualism, like you were saying earlier. That's what my dad would always say. That's what made the United States a great country, is a country of individualism, where people could come from all over the world, be themselves, create. And that's that Leo energy, creativity. This country is at its best when it's creating, when there's a playfulness, when it's fun, when people are living from their heart center. That's where we need to be, living from our heart center. Well, in order to live from our heart center, we have to face our fears. We have to face our insecurities as individuals, but also collectively. And then we have to tap into our emotions, which says just let people be. if you're not harming anyone, then no harm should be brought to you. It's about respecting one another. And through respecting one another, then you feel safe to open your heart, to have fun, to be joyful and creative. Mm-hmm. And when this country is joyful and creative, shining its light, sharing its warmth, that's when it's the best. And that's why it's attracted people from all over the world to want to come and live here.
Yeah, well, and it's really that Cancer sun makes us deeply sentimental about our home, which we are in the United States.
And the past. We're in love with the past.
But we're also a home for so many from other countries. Exactly. Like you described.
Yes, totally. Yeah. Exactly. My grandfather arrived in this country on July 4th.
Wow.
Yes. July 4th, symbolic. 1923. Mm-hmm. Ellis Island. The Statue of Liberty came in. And this country took him in. No parents.
Wow.
Yeah, an orphan. So.
The country itself was the parent.
Yeah, in a sense.
The mother. Yes. Cancer is the mother.
Yeah. So he felt a strong connection to this country because he didn't have a home or a life in his home because it was taken from him.
Yeah.
Came here and was able to create one. So. All right. That's the week. On that note, thank you all for listening in and being a part of our journey here with the Weekly Transit. We wish you all the best in the week ahead, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Weekly Transit. If you're curious to learn how these transits or any others may be affecting you, or if you are interested in learning more about your astrological code, contact me for a reading at theweeklytransit.com. If you're interested in delving into the world of psychotherapy with Gabriella, you can connect with her at innervisionpsychotherapy.com. Music written by Ben Leinbach from Listen Deep by Amber Herzog Lyman. This episode was produced by me, Scott Tajarian. Wishing you all the best as you ride the planetary waves.